Hello, and welcome to Through the Mist with me, your host, Joe. This is the Void Inverse Theory podcast where we look at the lore and try to understand how it all works. In this episode, we'll be looking at magical items! Again! Hey, up my chucks! What we're doing then? Hi, everybody. Everybody. I hate how I say everybody sometimes. Everybody. Oh, everybody. Anyway, hello, guys, gals, and everything in between. How are we all doing this fine, insert time of day here? Yes, hello. So, like, since I last recorded, there's been more casting updates, and, like, I'm just getting lost and, like, behind now on what I've said and what I haven't said. So, yay, the Podro series is happening. Boop, boop. Let's move on. Yeah. That's all we've got to say about that one. So, in other news, questions. I ask questions, as we all know. I like to receive answers to those questions that I ask as well. So, what was the question this month? Well, the question this month was, how did Daedalus replace the statues around Manhattan? Because it's an interesting thought. Very intriguing, I find. And we had two jokey answers. But from good, very good friends, being Darian and Robert, you know those guys, they've been on here, and they have fun. Yeah, so Darian just wrote meticulously, which, like, correct, nothing wrong there. And Robert wrote, maybe he was the master architect for all of New York, which, like, just judging on when things are built and how things built and just doesn't kind of work, but at the same time, fun thought! Experiment! And if you want to get a part of the show, remember, you can always email through.t.mist@gmail.com. Have not had a single email yet, and it's kind of depressing, actually. But it's there if you want to get in touch with the show, or you can get in touch via the Instagram, which is the only social we have here at Through the Mist, which is @through_mist. All links and everything in the description for all things shows. Yeah, yeah. Yep. I will see you on the other side of this ad break.
Have you heard the one about the...
That's right. That was an ad break. No, I lied. No ad breaks, just music. Pure, unadulterated tunes. Yes, so... magical items. That's what we're looking at today. Magical items 2.0. So this is the sequel episode to episode 14. It is also, in fact, the 1 year anniversary of the magical items episode. So, that's why it took this long to put this one out, because I got closer to the time when I just wait for a year. And most of these items are listener suggested items. Some newer than others. Some from around recently, just before I started research for the episode. And some from when the original episode got pushed out. So... yeah, but however, if you're listening and you request an item and it is not in this list, that's because it was in the last episode. Be better! No, I'm just joking. Just, you know, remember. So, where to start then? Where to start in the episodes of the mists and things? Well, we'll start with an Owen entry. We shall start with an Owen entry to the list, which is... the Hunter's Weapons, as in the Hunters of Artemis, not like just your generic hunter, you know, bish, bash, bosh. So, why are we looking at the Hunter's Weapons? Why not? And also because Percy states that they just seem to vanish and appear as they required. The bows had just appeared out of nowhere. I don't know how they did it. They must have been enchanted to hold more stuff. I noticed their bows and quivers were also magic. But when the hunters needed them, they just appeared, slung over their backs. And that was two quotes there. And I realised I didn't really start the first quote in the right place because it was talking about their bags. Their bags just seemed to hold them out of stuff. And their bows and quivers also just seemed to appear on their backs when required. So the first question about these weapons I had when I was like, okay, so the bows, they just seem to appear. Well, if no one's really paying attention... Percy's sword just would seem to appear in his hand randomly. You wouldn't notice it, except you'd probably notice him put the cap back on when he wanted to put it away. But, like, when he just gets it out, it just appears out of nowhere, you know? So is it a bit like Riptide in that sense, that it, like, shrinks into something small? Percy just isn't being that observant. However, I have a counter quote to disprove this theory of mine, this initial thought, this initial hypothesis, which is this one here. "A hunter's bow," she yelped in surprise, as the bow began to shrink and became a hair clip shaped like the crescent moon. "It's just like Percy's sword!" So as we can see, that being Bianca, does not have a bow that shrinks, so it is probably not that system. So, goodbye! So if it's not like Riptide, where does everything come from, and what is up with these bags? Like, what is the thing? Well, we've come across a bit like the bags before. And surprise, surprise, it's actually Chironi's wheelchair. Mr. Chiron himself. Mr. Chironus the first. Yep, Chironus the first. So, basically, we are going to use the principles of the Kane's Chronicles lockers, which are the place where Sadie and Carter kind of store their magical items and can access them with concentration and through training. But we're saying in this scenario, the bags, just like the wheelchair, almost a gateway into this other plane of existence, this space between spaces, where they store stuff, and the bags help the users access this without actually having to concentrate and access it from thin air. It's a portal into it, just like the chair is a portal for the horse part of Chiron. And that's how they work, which is nice. I like that. Makes sense. Moving on. The bows, I'm going to suggest, have a similar principle, but maybe the point of access is a bit different. So instead of putting your hand through something or sitting into something, the jackets themselves, their silvery jackets themselves, are this source into the dance. And they just go, "Oh, I need my bow." And like the bow like almost appears out of the jacket. And the reason I'm thinking down this road is because of the slung over their backs. They never appear in their hand. It's always over their backs and they have to get them off and draw it. Like, and it's a cheeky line. It's probably not really like that, but that's the line I'm using to make this work. And, like, just to state, this is all set up by Artemis. So the hunters themselves will not really know exactly, like, the mechanics of how they access this stuff. They say, "Oh, Artemis has done all this. She's done the magic to make this work." And they almost are given, like, instinctive knowledge of how this should work. We see it with Bianca. When she becomes a hunter, she also gains some of the basic knowledge that the hunters of Artemis need to require to function. Yeah, so that's how they work. They are dawn-stored weapons that have access through the jacket, and they can also store their camp stuff and camp bits in bags that are also holes into the dawn. And that is that for Hunter's Weapons. First of the listener item suggested, and that is Leo's tool belt, and it was suggested by Lucy_Chada on Instagram. So why am I looking at this one next? Well, it has a very similar set of powers to what we were just talking about with the hunter's camping bags, how it seems to grab stuff from nowhere via the belt. So okay, let's apply the same logic then and see if it works out. So, Kane Chronicles lockers, someone has to put something in there before it can be taken out. And we know Leo isn't the first person to use it. So in this scenario, it's relatively reasonable that someone else had pre-stored all this stuff in the lockers and Leo's just now accessing. Because it's not like Leo doesn't put stuff in there to access later. That happens. That works. However, we see Leo pull out some stuff that I feel doesn't actually work with this theory. The main one being foodstuffs and, like, who back in whenever time frames I can't remember right now. Would pack burger, all varieties of burger patties into their tool belt. It seems a very odd thing to do. And like you're getting very mod, Leo's taking out very modern tools. Like he's not taking out the old versions of these tools. It's not like this is pre-stored items. Now, it's okay. If that doesn't work, how does this work? Because what I don't want to do is say that the tool belt creates this stuff. But that doesn't feel right with the system of magic that we have. It doesn't feel like it works. I couldn't think of any places where this is actually true. It doesn't, like, usually either they're transported from somewhere else, or we can say, like, they're pre-packaged. Like with the hunter's weapons, where Artemis has stored loads and basically each hunter has access to all this stuff. The Artemis is almost like pre-stored. That doesn't quite work there. I don't feel like it's nice. So what is this thing then? And we've also got to remember this, it does have its limits. It can only ever pull out mortal items, and usually it's stuff associated with a workshop. It also has a cooldown period that is almost equivalent to the size of the object you're pulling out. Like a bolt's cooldown period is so short that it almost doesn't exist, whereas a chainsaw's cooldown period is quite long. And Leo can put anything in there and pull out at a later date, whether the tool belt was able to produce it or not, like the fortune cookie and that piece of crystal from Calypso's Island. Like, that's how this works. So, well, the second, that last bullet point, we can say that's a bit like the Cane Chronicles lockers, as in that's how that's working. It's working in a similar way. But then again, my gut feeling of this can't just create the stuff, or is it that me feeling like it's too much of a cop-out, either or. The cooldown period suggests that something like this is happening. Like, it's a... But like I said, it doesn't feel like creating that from nothing is weaved into the narrative about the magic that we've created for the Roydenverse. That doesn't seem to fit quite right. It doesn't work. It doesn't feel nice to work like that. So the only option I can think of is like maybe like there's a nanobot factory on the other side. But again, foodstuffs. That's fine for the equipment, because if the nanobots are small enough, they can create any circuit scenario to create anything out of it. But foodstuffs, you're not going to be eating robots. So I've basically hit a dead wall with this one. I've gone, okay, well, I don't know what to do now. I don't want to say it's created, but it seems like the only option that it actually creates this stuff from nothingness, which... it just doesn't feel right. So please let us know your thoughts on that one, because I've hit a wall. Next up is another Owen item, the Archimedes spheres. And again, this kind of links to what we were just talking about. Because they seem to be able to do absolutely everything and anything you ask of them. So we have a similar problem to Leo's tool belt. But with the spheres, we're told that rather than Leo's tool belt, which seems to be magically based, the spheres are mechanically based.
And it's a bit like the automatons last time around. How they are more mechanical based than magic based, but then celestial bronze
questions get thrown around. So... the spheres can seamlessly do anything, and basically, in my head, these are just extremely complicated computers with a very weird interface. So the only real thing left, that makes sense for how they're almost able to do anything then, so they can be programmed to do almost anything, but then to do these things, you still need the mechanics inside the spheres, the initial processes, like you would need a spark plug. To produce a flame, you'll need the fuel to produce a flamethrower and all this sort of stuff. Okay, so then how does it do it? How does it be able to produce this thing? And I mentioned it like a little ago. And it produces items as well. It shoots out items such as the net. It's not just like it. So there's questions. There are questions. And the only answer I can think of for inside these are mini nanobot sort of factory things. However, they also are able to replenish themselves. And we are back with questions. A question that the answer is science fiction. Things don't need to fully make sense as long as the story's fun. I think that's where we are. And it's really disappointing and I hate it. Like, genuinely, it disgusts me that I can't figure out these two. I'm like, yeah. However, I started research relatively late in the month and I'm recording on day of release. So, no time to fix it. So, please help. If you have any ideas or thoughts or theories, remember, @through_mist on Instagrams or through.t.mist@gmail.com on the emails. So please do happy. I would be very happy if you got in touch to help out with these. And maybe at the start of the next episode, we can figure it out together. Stuff that is a lot less linked. Cat O'Prittis, aka Piper's Dagger, aka Helen of Troy's Dagger. This was also a suggestion by Lucy_Chatter on Instagrams. So this future vision-y dagger. Well, as a dagger, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's like all other daggers. I'm gonna ignore it. It's celestial bonds. We're good. It makes sense. Bullsh. But how does it look into the future? It's the future vision part that we've got to question right now. So episode 22, knowledge of the future. So in that, we basically ended up going, there's another plane of existence that gods can view into and see the different outcomes and the fates almost help manipulate it, prophecies, etc., etc., etc. So the dagger seems to show more short-term futures than prophecies, for example. And they also seem to show things that are maybe happening in real time. So with the short-term futures, what's important about that is that the probabilities and the possibilities are more limited. They're more set in stone about what will happen or what needs to happen or where you need to go to ensure that the overarching role will work. And then the real-time stuff is a bit like the sword. No, the shield during the Siege of Manhattan, as now I'm renaming it. But that works slightly differently than the... I feel like the blade is much more future visions and visions rather than reflections. So what is important to know is that these aspects of the blade are cut off. The fact that it can show the future dies out at the end of Boo, and it's reconfirmed this in Toa. Like, there are very light implications that it is somehow linked to Apollo not being kicked off Olympus, but it's like a throwaway line. It's literally like two lines of sentences. It's not confirmed or denied. It's just said and moved on. But so we won't really know if the visions are linked to Apollo not being, well, prophecy just being screwy and communications for demigods being screwy or not until we get a standalone Piper book and she interacts with the blade somehow, somewhere over the rainbow. The overall theory is that the blade almost acts as a window into this other plane and it sees very short-term futures or like the now points in time, but it's viewing it through this plane, maybe like a couple seconds in the future. And it shows the world what they want, desire to know, or like what they need to know to help understand. Yeah, what they need to understand for the future. So like with the Piper Percy Jason arc, it showed her where they needed to go to be able to save Nico, but just did not show the greatest image to help understand that. Yes. It's a bit mean what it shows, but it shows useful information. Next up is going to be an extremely simple one. It is the combat ukulele, and this is suggested by our good friend Robert. So they have put forward the combat ukulele. So let's start off with the descriptive quotes about the combat ukulele. It was made from celestial bronze, thin sheets of metal, acid etched to resemble the grain of blonde oak wood. The instrument weighed next to nothing, yet I imagined it was almost indestructible. But it's a combat ukulele. You can fight with it if you need to. So, what I've gained from this is that as an instrument, this ukulele ain't special in any way, shape or form, besides from the fact that it is a metal uke. So it would sound a bit different, like, you know, because material resonance and all that. So it would sound a bit different, but as purely instrumentally wise, it's nothing special. The only thing that really makes it special is that it's a pretty good club. If you hit a monster hard enough, it would turn to dust, blunt force trauma and all that, but the uke wouldn't break. So that's where that comes from. That's why it's a combat ukulele, because it can be used to hit things with. So the only reason it's magic is really because Apollo's playing it. It's the only reason musically it is magic, is because Mr. Music Man himself is the one playing it. The only thing I can see that might be true, but it's no, absolutely zero evidence for it, I just think it's something that Harley would have done, is put an amp in it. You know, you just put an amp. It's an amp in it, so it just makes the sound louder. You know, just because that feels like a very Harley thing to do. So, the last one of the session is other flying shoes. And this was brought to us via DJ of Muses of Mythology, formerly Podcast of Poseidon. So these seem relatively simple on the surface. However, another question came along with just, can we look at the flying shoes? And it was to do with something not fun. But we're going to look at it anyway! So, the shoes themselves, simple on the surface, because they are based in myth. We can just go, here's the myth thing, here's the story thing, that's our source. The myth doesn't need a source, because it's the myth. So, they're said to be a gift to Luke from Hermes. And I'm like, I just thought of it. They would probably be gifted to help him with his initial quest, but Luke probably didn't lose him, because, you know, daddy issues. Yeah, so as I said, the shoes, gift from Hermes. Hermes has flying sandals. There's why the shoes can fly. Done. That's all you need to know there. Boom, bash, bush. However, the second question that came with it is about their sentience. And you're like, okay, hang on a second, dear. What you want about? What do you mean they're sentient? They're just shoes. However, they do seem to have some kind of personality. Quote time! The other winged shoe tugged itself off, circled around us angrily and kicked our heads in protest before flying off into the chasm to join its twin.
It protested by kicking them in the face.
So... I mean, besides being an absolute classic piece of visual humoury, it does pose the question, are these shoes alive? / sentient? You might just be getting sent, I'm not going to go alive again. It's too much hassle. So what do we know about these shoes? So we knew the shoes that can fly in the myth. They were given to our heroes, by Luke. Luke cursed the shoes to drag the wearer into Tartarus whenever they got within a certain distance from it. That the curse works, it pulls Grover in, and they both end up in the pit. Who knows what's to happen to them then, because we don't see them in House of Hades. Which, now I'm thinking about it, would have just been such a fun little thing to see these two shoes just flying around. It'd been hilarious. So, the main thing here is I feel like something happened when these shoes got cursed. Because they were definitely, Hermes wouldn't have cursed these shoes. That seems a bit off-brand for him. To curse shoes to drag someone into Tartarus. That feels a little off-brand. So, I think the sentience comes from the curse. And it also comes from the purpose that they had, which was to get to Tartarus. Beforehand, they were just shoes. And once they made their journey into Tartarus, after being activated by the distance sensors in them, I don't know, they would just become normal shoes again. But during that period of time, when they had a job to do, and that job was to get into Tartarus, they basically gain some form of personality to get there. How that works? They're shoes. But that's why it happened. And basically, the purpose, when activated, they would basically want this task to be completed. And if anyone stopped them in this task, they would do whatever it took to get down there or kick them on the heads because it delayed them. Yeah, that works. Classics. So, thank you for indulging this theory. If you have any comments on this theory or theories you own that you want me to discuss, you can always email them through to through.t.mist@gmail.com. That's too many throughs in a row. Or you can follow the Instagrams @through_mist. Make sure to follow the podcast, like the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, whatever I have to do on whatever platform you listen on to get the podcast out there. I've been Owen, and come back next time as we try to see through the mist!
Technoblade never dies.